Get the whole band together with Workday and pair finance and HR on one platform for an epic performance. With Workday AI at the core, you'll make confident decisions faster than ever, and you'll drive flawless business and finance operations with an agile platform that constantly evolves to future-proof your organization. Be a finance and HR rockstar with Workday. Visit workday.com to learn more.
Listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go.
Amateur Traveler, episode 120. Today the Amateur Traveler goes to Guatemala, Honduras, and Belize on bicycle. Find out about safety, cost, Mayan ruins, and where you can get good Chinese food. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I have three news stories for you today. The first one comes from a story I spotted on USA Today travel section, and it makes me wonder if it's time to rethink the common practice of overbooking airline flights. According to one particular family, overbooking airline flights led to the death of a passenger. In a lawsuit, a family is claiming that because they were bumped from a flight, a man by the name of Romiel Yolera missed a dialysis treatment and came home a day later and died on the flight. And then, because it looks like all three of my news stories are bad news items this week, the second news story is about the tourism industry in Kenya. I'm sure by now you've heard that there have been riots in Kenya following an election, and this is starting to deter tourists. There are certainly some tourist companies who are recommending people not go or who are canceling flights, and the implication for Kenya is fairly major because they bring in $500 million a year from the tourism industry. And in a country where school teachers make about $3 a day, that's a lot of money. So people will be watching that fairly closely because it won't take very long before people decide to go someplace else. And then in a similar bad news item, and again, next week I'll try and get some better news, there's been an increase in crime in Baja California, some of which has been targeting tourists, that is starting to deter people from going to that location. And the biggest problem has been armed robbers who in some cases even have been impersonating the police near the area of Rosarita. And that's a place on the Baja Highway that I've actually been. It's in the northern part of Baja. And so that is something that, if it doesn't end pretty soon, will also start to deter tourists from going to that location. Again, I'll try and get you some better news next week. Links to all three of these stories can be found on the show notes at amateurtraveler.com and also on my new travel news blog, which is tripinator.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Mark, who is coming to talk to us about a trip to Central America, a bicycling trip to Central America. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
So you are sitting in your apartment in the Upper West Side here, but you're come to talk to us about a trip to Central America. What brought you to Central America, and when was this trip? Let's start with that.
This trip was at the end of August and early September of this year. Mm-hmm. Actually, of last year, because it's 2008.
Sure, right.
What brought me to that part of the world was the desire to see new places and cheap airfare, to be honest.
Okay, so you found an airfare deal at the last minute, or just planned far in advance?
Essentially, I did find some really affordable flights at the last minute. I was finishing a summer internship. I'm an MBA student.
Okay.
So I had a few weeks off, had 3.5 weeks off. I knew I wanted to do something kind of adventurous. So I began by just looking around the world and seeing where I could fly to cheaply and thinking of exotic places. and there were some great deals to Central America that I found on the internet.
And I think you were successful in terms of adventurous. Certainly,
yes.
bicycling through Central America makes it on my list of adventure travel. Now, there's obviously some that might not find adventurous enough, but anything that my wife would go on with me, I figure is adventurous. What was your overall impression of the whole thing now that you've been there? You were there for how many weeks?
3 weeks, 21 days.
In which countries?
About 2 weeks was spent in Guatemala, and then 4 days in Honduras and 3 days in Belize.
Okay.
I left with just an incredibly positive impression of the region and of the countries in particular, and definitely a greater appreciation for the nuances and the differences between the individual countries.
Okay.
It was just an incredibly positive experience. I was kind of prepared to have a number of things go wrong with my bicycle, maybe falling apart or maybe getting swindled or something like that, but nothing bad happened.
What was your overall itinerary, first of all? Give us a picture of where you were traveling. Where'd you start? Where'd you travel through? How much distance?
I traveled a little more than 1,000 miles
in
total. Okay. I started in Guatemala City, which is not the nicest place in most travelers' books. But it is very close to some of Guatemala's really top-notch tourist destinations.
Okay.
I had read a lot and mapped out distances between likely rest stops before I left, but I hadn't actually booked any hotels or didn't have a entirely set itinerary before I left. Started in Guatemala City. The next day, I rode about 25 or 30 miles to Antigua, Guatemala, which is the colonial capital, which is a beautiful cobblestone streets, very touristy city. Spent, I guess, the next week to week and a half in the highlands of Guatemala, which is Mayan country. I think most people are descendants of the Mayan Empire. Mm-hmm. They still speak the language and wear the colorful clothes and are just incredibly hospitable people. Unfortunately, their roads are not as hospitable and very hilly.
Okay.
So I found myself traveling a little slower and not making as great time as I had hoped to, but it was just not too hot, which was nice because it was summertime and I was riding a bicycle. I went from Antigua to Panajachel. Some people call it Gringolandia because it's attracted so many Westerners over the years. It's just a beautiful little town on Lake Adelon, which is a spectacular lake with clear blue water and great budget tourist infrastructure.
Okay.
And there are a number of other towns which I would have liked to see on the lake, but I had decided to spend the majority of my time bicycling. So after that, I traveled to a few places that were not really on the map for most tourists, unless you had a particular interest in Mayan culture, I guess. Those towns were Santa Cruz de Quiche, and I can't even remember the names of all the towns. But I spent about a week cycling through and then made it into the region which is called the Petén, El Petén, which is flatland, kind of jungly area that is home to Tikal, which is probably the most famous Mayan ruins site, which is in the middle of the jungle and just spectacular. It's just something that is, you know, one of the most cool man-made things I've ever seen. From there, I went into Belize, which was quite a change culturally because Belize was actually a British colony until around 1980 or 81 and has a big Caribbean influence in addition to a large Latino population, but English is widely spoken. Whereas I should mention that for over a week, I didn't speak a word of English in Guatemala and the highlands of Guatemala. So I crossed the border into Belize. Also, the roads were significantly better. I should mention that once I got out of the mountains of Guatemala, I was able to ride about twice as fast as I was before, which was very comforting. I first stopped in a little town. The official name is San Ignacio, but everyone calls it Cayo. There I did the first and only tour I did on the trip, which was to a underground Mayan cave, which was pretty spectacular. It was a cave that was used until about 1,000 years ago for rituals, and then it was abandoned and lost. You have to actually swim into it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we've covered two different parts of Belize in another show, and that's one of the two things we covered.
Oh,
that,
really?
That and Tikal, actually. But
Oh, great. So then I rode down to this small town called Dangriga. When I say a small town in Belize, that means something because the country only has about 250,000 people in it. So this was a really small town. Dangriga is the center of Garifuna culture, which is the Black Carib culture, the mixture of Spanish and African slave populations.
Okay.
I had intended to ride further in Belize, but I saw a sign for a ferry to Honduras leaving the following morning. I thought that would be interesting to take a ferry through the Caribbean. I got on the ferry, which traveled down the coast of Belize, stopped in a place called Palencia and Punta Gorda, and then went through the Caribbean to Honduras, to Puerto Cortes. From there, I rode to the second biggest city in Honduras, San Pedro del Sur, which was not a very nice place. And then the next day, I rode to the city of Copan, which is located about a mile from the Copan ruins, which are very striking in their own right. Not quite as grand as Tikal, but very intricate carving in the rock.
Okay.
The funny thing happened, actually. I had gotten a few flat tires at the beginning of the trip. There were flats that destroyed the tube in my bicycle, and I had brought two extra tubes with me, so I quickly went through those two tubes, and then I bought a local tube and carried it with me in case I got another flat.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, I didn't get any flats for the next about 2 weeks until I got about 20 miles from the city of Copan. I got a flat, and I realized I had to get rid of the tube that I had on my bicycle, and I tried to put the new tube on. It wouldn't fit. It was the wrong type of tube. So I just hopped on a bus with my bicycle, and when I got to Copan, I searched every single bike store, and I couldn't find a tube that would fit my bicycle. Fortunately, I only had about 3 days left in the trip, but it turned out that if I had had problems with tubes in the past, I would have had serious problems because I don't think in many places in Central America I could get a tube that would fit on my bicycle.
Did you bring your bike down then? This was your bike rather than one you rented or bought or something in Central America?
Exactly. It was my bicycle.
Okay.
Pretty decent quality mountain bike with road tires put on it and a rack on the back.
Okay. The reason I ask is I've been listening to a couple podcasts from people who are doing bicycle traveling, and there's a couple different schools of thought. Obviously, one is the nicer bike, you can travel more distance, and the other one is, well, if you get a cheap bike locally, it might be easier for you to get replacement parts. And it sounds like you kind of ran into the problem that the second approach addresses.
I did, which would have been bad.
Yeah.
But I don't think a cheaper bike would have held up because a lot of the roads were pretty bad.
Uh-huh.
And it was just for my own comfort. I had this bicycle for about 8 years and replaced the frame on it recently.
Uh-huh.
It's like my baby. So it was great to have it.
What's the brand of bike you used?
I have a Specialized Stump Jumper. It's kind of a base level competition mountain bike.
Okay. And that's the brand is?
Specialized, and the model is Stump Jumper.
Okay.
I can't speak enough about Specialized as a company. I'm sold on them. They're great.
Well, obviously, when you're taking it on this kind of rugged adventure, that speaks well to something that can bear up with that kind of, probably your Sears bike, not so much your...
No.
There goes this Sears sponsorship right there.
I found Kayak, the flights.
Oh, on kayak.com? Okay.
To be very helpful in terms of just kind of scanning different regions, looking for deals.
Yeah, I actually have one of the first episodes of the video show is how to use the buzz alerts at Kayak to look for what are cheap flights to get to in Central America, for instance, or where can I go for cheap?
I'll actually go look at that now because I'm always kind of trying to figure out places to go to.
Right. On the whole trip, what was the biggest surprise? You didn't have a lot of planning ahead of time for this trip.
The biggest surprise was probably just how great the people were. I know it's kind of the cliche to say people are great wherever you travel, but Guatemalans in particular, I would travel to small towns in Guatemala and never hear anyone, you know, yell gringo at me or anything. And people would come over to me and be like, hey, nice bicycle. What are you doing? I just found that in spite of the fact
my Spanish, it sounds like.
And my Spanish is not fluent at all. I was able to have pretty intelligent conversations wherever I went with people that were very interested in what I was doing. And it was just really refreshing. I mean, a number of times I would stop on the side of the road to eat something and cars would pull over and ask me if I was okay, if I'd want to put my bicycle on the top of their car. People were just great.
That seems to be a theme that I also am hearing more as I'm following a couple different bicyclists. In fact, I'll mention another couple that I'm following their adventures in the community section of the show, but I get this common theme of when you're on a bike, you get more interaction with locals because you don't have this barrier, for instance, of if you're in a rental car or something like that.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. I should mention that actually, because I did have that flat tire, I took a bus back about 200 or 300 miles from Copan to Guatemala City. But every time I did take some type of public transport, I also was able to strike up great conversations. And one guy invited me back to his town, about 10 miles hike up a trail off the main road, which I politely turned him down on.
Any other surprises on the trip to people?
I was surprised in my ability to both not travel nearly as fast as I had anticipated in the mountainous terrain and travel much faster on the flat terrain. I rode over 150 miles one day on the, flat. That was less difficult than some days I rode where I rode 40 or 50 miles on mountainous, unpaved roads.
Okay.
It was great that I had the bad roads at the beginning of the trip because I was able to really fly when I got to the good roads in Belize and in the Petén, El Petén, and Honduras.
Okay. And then what were some of the highlights for you?
In terms of sights, I thought Panachal in Guatemala was great. Lake Atitlán is one of the most beautiful lakes I've ever seen. One of the most beautiful places I've seen with a great community of expats. I had just spent a night there, but I felt like I made a few friends and have actually talked to them since I left. It seemed like a nice place to spend a good bit of time in. The ruins at Tikal and Copan were striking.
Can you describe them a bit for those people who aren't seeing your pictures right now in the enhanced feed?
Okay. Well, Tikal is about 10 miles into a national park, which is pretty dense jungle. So coming into it on a bicycle was really neat because I could hear monkeys howling, and it really felt like I was in the middle of nowhere getting into it. And it's a very large area, probably 2 miles by 2 miles, filled with pyramids, which are up to, I think, about 200 feet high. Because it's so densely jungled, you can't see most of the areas from each other. A lot of times I found myself walking on little paths with no one else in sight and coming to these pyramids. Some of the bigger ones, there was a good number of people around. But in the smaller ones, I was the only person, which is very special because I like to kind of absorb things in a quiet, peaceful manner when I travel.
Okay.
Copan is more compact, but equally striking. The way in which I guess it's much more impressive is there are very intricate carvings on the rocks in the pyramids and the temples there. And there's also
What sort of things are carved on the temple?
I think there's calendars.
Okay.
Pictures of Mayan gods and of people. There's a really great museum at the site at Copan, which has the largest temple recreated and painted like it apparently was in Mayan times. That's really neat to see what it would have looked like back then. And one thing that's great about Copan is there is a little city, colonial city, called by the same name, Copan, about a mile from the ruins, with really nice cobblestone streets and all types of accommodation from really backpacker budget places to, I think, some probably 4-star hotels. It's just a very nice place to spend a few days relaxing in.
And I love the little colonial cities with the cobblestone streets, but when you say that and you're on a bike trip, I think of sometimes where those have intersected for me, and that doesn't always work out as a great combination.
Yes, it's not very comfortable to ride a bicycle on the cobblestone streets, but fortunately they're usually limited to just the city
downtown
limits themselves.
Or so. Okay, yeah.
Once I got to a city, I was pretty happy just to be there and know that I could buy some food, have a bed to sleep in relatively soon, so didn't mind riding on the streets for a little while.
Did you ever run into the situation where, because you were not sure how much distance you could cover, you ended up not at some place that you could stop when the legs gave out? Or
so I had been traveling between Copan and Sayeshe. I saw a number of small towns along the way. I had figured that I would be able to stop in one of them. But as I got to the first one, and my map kind of told me how big each town was, I saw that there really wasn't any type of hotel accommodation. And I also noticed that I was making great time. So I thought maybe I could push all the way to Sayeshe that day. I did. And when I got there, it was almost fully dark. So if I had been any slower, it would have been pretty scary because you wouldn't want to be riding in the dark. But I guess I got a little bit lucky with that.
What resources were you using for planning your route?
My Bible was my Lonely Planet guidebook, which I think is still the kind of standard budget travel.
Sure, especially for this kind of country. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What did you find that it recommended that you thought was a waste of time?
I wouldn't say anything in particular.
Okay.
I had some minor differences of opinion with regard to hotels.
Okay. We were going to get to hotels here in a little bit. Okay. What kind of differences of opinion with just quality of hotels?
I just loved some of them and wasn't crazy about some of them that they had recommended. But I think that's also somewhat dependent on your experience with the people working there and which room you get. But in general,
when I see some of the hotels, you have pictures up on your website, and I'll put up some pictures on the enhanced feed. You were staying in some very low-budget hotels, a $5 hotel you have here and a $7 hotel. So
yes.
You're not staying in the Club Med Honduras or whatever. So,
no, I wasn't. I felt safe in these places.
Okay.
And I was alone. I wasn't worried about anybody else. And I was waking up pretty early in the morning and getting on my bicycle and riding. So I didn't mind staying in the kind of budget places. And
clean, comfortable enough. I mean, met your needs, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Some of the towns, there really was no other option.
Uh-huh. But every town had some option like that, at least. You didn't do any camping.
No, I didn't do any camping. One thing that I did research and get pretty comfortable with was just the availability of hotels and knowing that between 50 and 100 miles between all the places I wanted to go, there would be somewhere to sleep.
Okay. The opposite. What did you run into? You're going along at bicycle speed, so you're seeing more of the countryside than many of us really see. What did you run into that should be in the guidebook? They overlooked it.
There wasn't a very extensive section on bicycling.
Sure.
Because I was bicycling, I was bringing food along. I felt like the guidebooks didn't always give the best options for small grocery stores.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
In general, the Lonely Planet guidebook was very good. It was at the end of the guidebook's vintage.
Like, okay.
There was one that probably came out a few months after I left. It would have been good to have something a little bit more timely.
But the towns were all still where they were supposed to be. And
exactly. I ran into the one area of a lot of road work, which made for very unpleasant riding because there were large trucks constantly driving on the roads and horrific amounts of dust. But I think that's kind of inevitable to run into some road work somewhere.
Sure. We talked about where you stayed. Food, you're doing most of your own grocery shopping during the day, it sounds like, at least.
A good bit.
Anything stand out in terms of you said there are differences between the different countries. Obviously, road quality was one of the obvious things. What else was different? Food, I assume, was a little different.
It was, yes. Belize is just a very interesting place, and there are a lot of Chinese immigrants there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So I found that in the cities and towns, which are granted the only places I really saw, I didn't go to too many villages, but at least half of the restaurants were actually Chinese owned.
Okay.
And they were Chinese food. So I basically ate a lot of Chinese food in Belize when I went to restaurants.
So your favorite Belize food was the Kung Pao chicken, you're saying?
I think so, yes.
Well, that's a little bit of a surprise. Okay.
I needed to consume a lot of calories because I was burning.
Sure.
You know, 5,000 or 6,000 a day, I guess. I ate a lot of rice and beans and tortillas when I was in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And Honduras. But when I got to the more touristy towns, Panajachel, Antigua, Guatemala, and Copan, there were international eating options that kind of blended the local cuisine
okay. In
with some pastas and some more kind of continental food.
Okay. What would you do differently if you did this trip over?
One problem I had was my panniers, the bags that I attached to my bicycle, kind of fell apart on me. I didn't buy the highest quality ones. I thought it was only a couple weeks I'd be traveling. So I really would have gotten better panniers. The stiff sole of one of my bicycle shoes broke, which made it a little bit uncomfortable at the end. And they were old shoes, so I guess I could have taken a little bit more care with regard to my gear.
Okay.
Beyond that, some minor changes with regard to what clothing I packed, which was a very small amount. But I don't think I would have changed too much.
Okay.
To be honest.
As we wrap it up then, any recommendations for somebody who is doing a similar sort of trip?
I do have one thing that I regret, okay. Which was I think I spent a little bit too much time riding on the main roads, particularly close to Guatemala City. So I would have probably bussed out of Guatemala City.
Okay.
Because it's pretty congested and pretty dangerous riding a bicycle on the Inter-American Highway.
Uh-huh.
That would be a big bit of advice. But, I mean, even bigger than that, I would just encourage people to try to take trips like this because most people couldn't believe that I spent 3 weeks riding a bicycle around Central America, doing it alone without any real plans. But it really was not very difficult, and I think a lot of people could do something like this. It's just not something that they'd ever consider doing. So I would advise people to consider new travel options if you have some time.
Anything else, Mark? Otherwise, we'll wrap it up.
No, I just thank you very much for letting me share my experience with you.
I appreciate you coming on the show. We had a little technical difficulties as we went to get Mark off of a cell phone. Just so people know, I tend to have a no cell phone rule here, so we had to find him a headset so we could get on Skype so that we could understand him a little better in terms of sound quality. I thank you very much for taking the time to share your trip with us. Certainly an unusual vacation and something I think that the listeners will enjoy.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
I have two different internet resources for you today that I think are appropriate in a show that is talking about cycling. The first one is iBike.org, which is the International Bicycle Fund. The site needs a little webmaster work, but there are interesting information there about different bike trips, especially bike trips in different countries, like traveling Africa by bike, for instance. And the second one is Adventure Cycling Association at adv-cycling.org, which focuses predominantly on U.S. cycling, but has all sorts of very good information about different routes and maps and such, especially featuring the brand new route in the U.S., which is the Underground Railroad bicycle route, which goes from Mobile, Alabama, all the way up into Canada. And I'll put links to both of those resources in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. In community news this week, I'll be going to the San Jose Travel Show this weekend, but by the time you hear this, you'll probably be a little too late. I do put information like that up on Tripinator.com, which again is the new travel blog. The other thing I posted to Tripinator.com last week is I did finally put up my trip journal from the cruise that I took down to Panama, and so you might want to check that out. Speaking of blogs, I had the funniest thing happen to me just last week. In addition to listening to about 100 different podcasts, fortunately some of which don't come out as often, I also follow about 500 different blogs or other RSS feeds, and some of which include scanning for interesting travel stories. And one of the blogs that I happened to catch a story from was from traveling2.com, and that's traveling spelled with two L's, the British way. And this is a couple that is biking around the world, or biking at least large portions of the world, and it caught my eye because there was a post they put up that said that they were 40 kilometers from Gaziantep. Well, Gaziantep, for those of you listening to the show, was a city I went to in eastern Turkey last February, which is the hometown of where Yawuz, who used to be an exchange student who lived with us, was from. So I went there to meet his family. So I saw that they'd had a rough day when I read their particular blog post, and so I told them some information about Gaziantep that they should check out when they got there. Well, so that was all well and good. They replied back to me that, oh, that's great. They'll definitely do that. And by the way, thanks for the tips and also the podcast. We've been listening to them in our tent recently, a good distraction from the cold. I had no idea they were listeners to the show, so it was certainly one of those small world stories. And so I send a greeting out to Andrew and Friedel as they are traveling, last I heard, in eastern Turkey. And with that, we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. If you have any comments for me, be sure to send them to host@amateurtraveler.com, post them on the discussion board, leave a comment on amateurtraveler.com or on tripinator.com, or check the other contact information, including the phone number in the contact page. I don't want to read that because I may be changing the phone number yet again. Sorry about that, but there's a way, I think, to switch to a phone number where people could call in for free. So I'll tell you more about that in the future. And that will do it for now. As always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.